This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, 6 o'clock in the morning right here on WFAN in the Investors Bank studio. I am Boomer Esiason, along with my man Greg Giannotti this morning from CBS Radio. And for those loyal listeners of the fan, they do know Greg, as Greg is a local boy from, of all places, Belport. I can't believe an East Islip guy and a Belport guy sitting here doing a radio show together. We're going to be together all week long. So good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing well. And what do you mean by of all places? I don't understand. You know, is it a bad place?
No, it's not a bad place. You and I, we got history. We got Belport, East Islip history. You know that. And you know the intensity that goes along with that, especially on the football field. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. And speaking of the football field, oh my God, we got a million things to talk about this morning. Everything from protests to football games, to great football games, I might add, in the 1 o'clock hour and the 4 o'clock hour yesterday, that were the best of the NFL. And it all started Thursday night, I think, between the Rams and the 49ers, to what the Steelers did to Alejandro Villanueva, their left tackle, who's a former West Point grad and three-tour Afghanistan Army Ranger, to all the different things that were going on across the NFL today. And you wake up this morning and you see it all across the papers. You see it all across the blog sites. Everybody's got something to say. And all of this is in direct response to what I thought was a very cringeworthy speech by President Trump down in Alabama.
Rally style
that made all of what we saw yesterday on the pregame shows, on the football fields, in NBA locker rooms, NFL locker rooms, Major League Baseball, and all athletes, completely predictable in the way that everybody responded.
Yeah, and I think this was the best of the NFL in all ways, from the beginning and through the end. Not only were the games absolutely great, this was the best week that we had of the NFL, but I think everybody's response, outside of a couple of situations, I thought was perfect. And in a weird way, this has united the players, united the players in the NFL. This has woken people up that haven't necessarily had big opinions on this before. What happened with the comments from President Trump and what it's done to the whole community of sports, I think eventually ends up being a good thing. It doesn't feel like it right now because all the divisiveness and people wanting to be angry all the time. But I think eventually we'll look back on this and say, that was the thing that got everybody together on the same page.
Well, I know one thing, Greg. It put everybody in a very, very uncomfortable situation, from Mike Tomlin stumbling through a post-game press conference trying to explain exactly what the hell the Pittsburgh Steelers were doing and why they would leave one of their teammates out there. And a teammate that knows what sacrifice truly is in this country is beyond me. Alex Smith, the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, talking about, you know, other comments that have been made out of the White House. It's mind-boggling. And I do believe that we are at the intersection of politics, sports, racial divide, and you name it. And the one thing I will say about an NFL football locker room, it takes all types to play football, and you better understand where everybody is coming from, because you're not always going to agree on things that are happening outside of your locker room. But I think yesterday from the players, the white players, the black players, the owners who have supported President Trump in his campaign, he has basically made it an untenable situation for everybody. And he's made everybody uncomfortable. And everybody in the NFL reacted the way they did, due in large part, I think, because they want to show that the NFL isn't a bunch of SOBs, as President Trump put it, that there are a lot of good players in the NFL. Yeah, do we have our problems with domestic violence? Do we have our problems with other issues and drugs and guns and all that other stuff? We're not any different than any other faction of life. It's just that we play on Sundays and Mondays and people see us and people hear us. But the far majority of NFL players are dedicated to their communities. They're dedicated to trying to do the right thing. They're dedicated to trying to speak to kids and be a great role model to kids. And I think that was really the impetus to why everybody took a knee yesterday. And I kind of say, while in the beginning, and I still feel this way, it's reprehensible that you would not stand for the flag and the anthem. And that's what's in my heart, and that's how I feel. And I basically held Colin Kaepernick to that point of view where I come from. Yesterday, I knew it was going to happen. You knew it was going to be out there. And it's not that I give anybody a pass. It's just that I was not shocked by the way the entire NFL community reacted to the president's comments on Friday night.
I think we need to understand where people are coming from more now than ever. And I think that everybody makes their own assumptions about what a protest means. And you make these leaps to things that it's not about. When people say that you're disrespecting the military by taking a knee, I don't think that any NFL player that took a knee has a disrespect towards the military. I just think that they have a different feeling about what's going on in the country, and we need to listen to that sometimes. And yesterday, I think the knees were in direct response to the comments. It wasn't about anything else.
That's right.
But everybody getting together saying that you're not going to call me an SOB. We are in this together. I'm more than just someone that should be fired for expressing my opinion. So when people get overly offended about the taking of a knee during the national anthem, I mean, let's look into the reasons why. Let's listen to one another, and now let's advance it from here.
Well, you know, it all started with a player wearing pig socks on the practice field.
Well, I mean, that's
where it all started.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, you know, his way of doing things was nuanced and was packaged and messaged, and people started attaching their agendas to him, and that would be Colin Kaepernick. Now we have guys like Marcus Peters and Marshawn Lynch sitting down with either their helmets on or stocking caps on, eating bananas, sitting on top of a cooler, completely disrespectful, and it is totally taking a whole nother turn. But again, I go back to yesterday. Yesterday was response to the president. I always believe that, and I don't know, I'm 56 years old. I've been around for a lot of different presidents, and I've been through a lot of, like most of you out there have been through a lot of different things that we as a country have had to face in the times of trouble. And I always think of a president as somebody who uses language to describe different situations, to calm all of us down, to give us a place to look for hope and feel that we're protected. And that wasn't the case this weekend. You know, I mean, anybody who saw that, unless, of course, you are a fierce Trump loyalist, you had to cringe at the words. You just had to cringe at the words. Just like I cringe when I watch Colin Kaepernick sit on the bench the first time he did it in preseason for the 49ers. I cringed. I'm like, oh, my God, here we go. I can't believe what I'm looking at. So I kind of get both sides of it all, Greg. I just – yesterday was an interesting day in the NFL. Some would say it was a dark day. Some would say it was a day where everybody came together. So internally, there's a lot of support. But at the end of the day, we are a sports station. And what I saw on the field of play yesterday from the players who play our great game of football was really quite entertaining.
Yeah, without a doubt, it was the best week in NFL by far. I mean, the end of the 1 o'clocks, and of course the way that the Giants game ended is something we'll talk about all morning, but everything that was happening towards the end of the 1 o'clock games back and forth was what the NFL is all about. But I just want to mention, you know, a dark day, it was the opposite of a dark day for me.
In your eyes, it may have been, but in other people's eyes, it is. I'm telling you, there are...
But how,
you know
though?
How many people, like, how many people from on Twitter would tweet, you know, and some people I don't even pay attention to because it's obviously coming from a really dark place within themselves. But for the far majority yesterday, you know, of the tweets that I received were NFL fans that are no longer watching the game.
But I can't believe that, though.
Well, but I'm just telling you what I received. That's right. All I'm saying. And the thing about it is that breaks my heart because I've been a part of the NFL family for, what, 30 years now.
You can't believe that these people are turning off the NFL. I don't believe anybody that says that.
Well, the ratings are down. You know, according to the president, the ratings are significantly down. I think the president should look at his ratings as well.
Right.
I mean, talk about ratings are going the other way.
But depending on
who you're talking about. And just so you know, I just want to clear this up because there is somebody on the line right now that's asking whether or not I support kneeling. I do not support kneeling. And if you have listened to me since the first day when Colin Kaepernick did what he did, you know exactly where I stand. What I said yesterday was completely predictable by the NFL players and the NFL community in response to a president that called the players sons of bitches. Are you kidding?
Right, and that's your community. That, I mean, these are your guys.
Right. By the way, you know, he may have been elected because he is not a political machine and he's anything but politically correct.
Right.
All I can tell you is that rhetoric is inflammatory and you are asking for problems. You are opening Pandora's box.
It's unnecessary.
What I thought last week, prior to what the president said on Friday, I thought the whole thing was kind of dying down. And what I have been saying on the NFL today for the last year, and I don't know why I continue to have to say it, and I am friendly with the commissioner of the NYPD, and what he and his force have been working on since he has taken over is community policing methods, trying to create partnerships within all of these different communities where problems have arisen. And we do have police officers who have been executed, and it is horrible. And we deal with that here every single day that it happens. I understand that. The fact of the matter is it's frustrating because people don't think things are getting done. But, yes, things are getting done. It takes time for things to change. And I want to be a football announcer. I want to be a former player who shows up and is proud of his product that he watches every single day. And for the most part, I am. I really am.
Were you proud yesterday of the response from all the teams and the players?
No, no, no. I wasn't proud. I didn't feel any sense of pride. I understood what happened yesterday. Yeah. And I understood why it happened. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is that the week before this past weekend, things really started to die down. You know, you had a player here, you had a player there. For some reason, the networks feel like they need to show those players, even though that's one of 46 players in uniform. He's sitting. We got to show it.
Right.
I get it. All right, fine. But it really had started to die down. And then all of a sudden, Pandora's box was opened up. And it was opened up in a number of different ways. It just wasn't the NFL players kneeling for the flag. It was Steph Curry's not invited to or disinvited to the White House. The Warriors are not coming to the White House. Steve Kerr pens an essay to the president. I mean, LeBron James calls him a bum.
Yep.
This one calls him an a-hole. I mean, blah, 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 blah. The whole, it just nonstop.
Yeah, and it's not going anywhere.
So what I'm saying to you over the previous 24 hours, it's obvious why things happened. So I don't
Trumpy McTrump face.
Yeah, whatever. But I don't support kneeling for the national anthem. I never have and never will. As a son of a World War II veteran and the godson of an ensign on the USS Nevada during Pearl Harbor, do you think for one minute that I would ever put myself in that situation, regardless of what somebody else's take on something is? And if I were the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers, in this case it's Ben Roethlisberger, so he's trying to balance everything that's going on in their locker room, I would have stood right next to Alejandro Villanueva. I would have locked arms with him, and I would have said, this guy stands for the best of what America has to offer. And unfortunately, you know, he didn't do that for whatever his reason, and his coach put them all in an untenable situation.
Well, that was bad, and that bummed me out in a big way. And I spent some years in Pittsburgh, and when I watched Mike Tomlin have that interview with Jamie Erdahl, and he basically said the reason he was keeping his guys in the locker room is because he didn't want to have them have to make a choice in to either stand or not stand. So you're going to remove yourself from the situation?
He goes, you can't remove yourself from the situation.
We're just here to play a football game. That's great, but things are different now. You have to deal with this. You can't just toss it away and say, well, we're going to remove ourselves, especially when you have a guy who went to Army on your team who has to now stand there in the tunnel. He wasn't even on the field. He stood there in the tunnel. And if there was some real leadership on that team, and you're right, it's not just Ben. There's got to be someone else that says, you know, Villanueva is a guy that we love, and we know he wants to stand. So let him go, and I'm going to go with him. You can't tell us to sit in the locker room the entire time. I mean, Mike Tomlin took it way too far. He's a serious guy. He's a great football coach. But to just try to ignore the situation yesterday and hide his guys in the locker room, I thought that was a coward way out.
Well, and then the Seattle Seahawks, of course, said, well, we stayed in the locker room out of respect for and love for our country. I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Right. I don't know what that really means. It was a very difficult day. It's a lot of heavy lifting, man. I'm telling you, it's exhausting.
It was a serious NFL Today show, man.
I don't know if I could. It always seems like there's a serious NFL Today show, especially when Charles Barkley shows up at the wrong time. The last time he showed up, it was the whole Adrian Peterson switching situation.
Right.
And he's trying to explain to me why switching's okay. Like, what?
You go outside and you get a stick and then you beat the kid to teach him a lesson. That's the way we did.
city, and you never got beat with a stick, you go get your own switch, Boomer.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly
what you do.
I basically, Charles is terrible. Yesterday, he came on, and he was sitting right there, and even he said, he looked at me and goes, man, I'm always here at the wrong time. It's unbelievable.
Wait, so that wasn't planned? They didn't bring him in, like, last minute?
No, that was planned. He was coming in.
Oh, wow.
And then, of course, Friday happened. I actually thought there was a very good chance that he would have backed out, but that's not who Charles is.
Right.
The great thing about Charles Barkley is he has an opinion, and he's willing to give it, and it's fine. I mean, and then, you know, away from all the opinions and all that other stuff, all of us, I mean, we have lots of laughs. We love watching football games.
Right.
He's a huge Eagle fan, so he's, you know, pestering the Giant fans in the studio and everything else like that. So that part of it is, you know, part of it is great.
I just thought they brought him in because he's going to have strong opinions on social matters. That's what I thought.
No. He comes in once or twice a year.
Just to bust chops.
Because he's a huge football fan.
Right, I gotcha.
So it's kind of an interesting, and it brings a different dynamic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that set, you're starting to look like the Supreme Court up there.
Right. So I know exactly how fans out there are going to feel, and I know that we're going to get a ton of calls today on all that. On top of all that, the Jets, what a performance yesterday. And, you know, I felt this way after the first 2 weeks. I don't know if you did, Greg, but they actually looked, you know, competent as a football team, even though they got blown out by Oakland. It was one bad play. It kind of gets snowballed and they get blown out. But yesterday, they put the beat down on Mike Tannenbaum's Miami Dolphins. I mean, beat them down and got after Jay Cutler, got after Jay Ajayi. So whatever was being taught over there from a defensive standpoint, it all resonated with those young players. And those young players came out and they just absolutely had a whale of a football game. And then on top of it, the 38-year-old Josh McCown must be reading TB12. Because whatever TB12 is taken up in New England, it seems like Josh McCown must be taking it down here for the Jets, because he played a pretty efficient game yesterday.
Yeah, it was shocking to me that's the way that game went. Because I watched the Miami Dolphins basically really look like a team that had been together for a long time. And Jay Cutler had been there for a couple of years when they beat the Chargers. And then they were just completely out of sorts. And a Jets defense that was just embarrassingly bad for stretches in the first couple of weeks were flat out great. And I think the bigger story was not so much about the Jets offense and McCown, but how they shut down Jay Ajayi. Now, he was on the injury report. He had a knee issue. Then he got hit.
Well, the Jets came in after 2 weeks being the 32nd ranked run defense.
Right. Yeah. And the fact that they shut that guy down.
30 rushing yards by the Miami Dolphins. That is a tip to the cap to the New York Jets. It's a tip of the cap to Todd Bowles. And I don't know how Jet fans feel about it this morning, but I would think as that game was unfolding yesterday over at MetLife Stadium, I think there had to be like a sense of astonishment, a sense of pride. And at the end of the day, you want your team to win, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that you have to give the Jet fans credit too for being loud. I mean, they were loud, they were happy, they were excited. This is a team, all you heard about was tanking for I don't know how long, and everybody was fired up to see him win,
right.
And they did. So I don't know if this is going to mean that this team is going to be 8-8 as opposed to the 2-14 that we expected, but this was a great day for the Jets and a great day for Todd Bowles, because the more of these games that he puts up in 2017, the better chance he has to stick around and keep his job through the next phase of this, which doesn't look like something that is on the horizon for him right now. But great job for that defense.
I would say that the Jets did not get the memo that they are tanking. So Chris Johnson was right in his assessment saying, we're not tanking. The coaches and players don't think it. And they certainly played that way yesterday.
Listen to Boomer Esiason, morning 6 to 10 on The Fan.
Like a lot of levels of incompetence in the Giants' loss yesterday, but we'll take it to the very end as Doug Peterson calls for the 61-yard field goal attempt to win it.
Elliott, 61-yard attempt to win the game. Snap is good. Kick on its way. Will it get there? Good! Jake Elliott! From 61 yards out, and the Eagles win it.
That's Bob Papa on WCBS 880. Yeah, exactly.
That would have been unbelievable had it been short and Odell Beckham Jr. could have returned.
That's what we were waiting for.
Yes.
We were kind of hoping for it.
Because I was going to say, remember, when the field goal team is on the field, who's on the field covering those kicks if, in fact, that ball is short? A bunch of fat guys that can't run, and there's no way in the world they could keep up with Odell Beckham Jr.
And good for Bob Papa for calling that thing with a little bit of excitement, because generally you get these homer broadcasts or something like that happens, and
good.
Yeah, good. So Bob Pop actually being a pro there, and we knew he would be.
Now, Elliott also had the game-tying 46-yard field goal with 51 seconds to go, and you figure, how in the world did he actually have a game-winning attempt? Well, because a comedy of errors for the Giants led them to that, including a 28-yard shank punt by Brad Wing. Carson Wentz throws for just 176 yards and one touchdown, and yet they win. The Giants had no running game to speak of, while Philadelphia ran the ball for a lot.
That's why they won, because they ran the ball.
Sure did.
And I know that in Philadelphia, they were getting ticked off after their loss to Kansas City, saying that they didn't try to run the ball enough, and they put the game totally in Carson Wentz's hands. But yesterday, and unfortunately for a defense, the real measure of a defense is your run defense. And the Giants got run over yesterday. That was an embarrassing performance by that Giant defense.
So I ask you this, because a couple of years ago, Tom Coughlin was run out of this town for having a lack of discipline on the team, for not being able to handle end-of-half situations. Looked a lot like that yesterday, including, star receiver doing a dog going to the bathroom motion after he scored a touchdown in a game that he was still losing. So Ben McAdoo was asked after the game, does the team have a discipline problem?
I mean, we don't want to be kicking off from the 20-yard line. That's not smart football. That's part of our problem right now. We're not playing smart enough
and
football.
And here's the problem with Ben McAdoo with me from last week, Boomer. He had no problem calling out Eli Manning last week, right? Quarterback, sloppy play.
Right.
He had every opportunity to call out Beckham as he was asked this question and gave you nothing.
With regard to the Odell celebration, it looked like he pretended to be a dog going to the bathroom on the field. What is your reaction to the other coach and your players doing that?
Next question.
Well, that we have nothing to say.
All right, well, here's the deal. You know, after what happened with Evan Engram Monday night against the Detroit Lions and everybody making a big deal out of him grabbing his crotch and then obviously kicking off from the 20-yard line and everything else that went along with that last week, you would think that the brainiacs over there playing wide receiver for the New York Giants would understand that you have to watch your post-touchdown celebrations as to not draw a flag. What makes this whole thing worse, not only the vile act itself, but the
stupidity.
He doesn't care. It's not even, right? It's not even stupidity.
They asked him after the game, "What about this?"
I was in the end zone. I scored a touchdown. I'm a dog, so I acted like a dog.
Great. I'm sure Nike loves that. Maybe they come out with new shoes called the Dog. but the point being is that he even said after the game that he feels no remorse towards hurting his team.
Right. Does not care. He says he's going to do it again. This is what he does. When he gets in the end zone, he's going to celebrate, and that's what he does.
And that would bother me as a Giant fan. That would really bother me because that hurts the team, and it's all about him. And I don't know if you saw him after that first touchdown on the sideline. It looked like he was taking a syringe and shooting some sort of drug in his arm or something. I have no idea what he's doing.
Best part of that was that the Eagle fans there that were sitting there did not care. They were just like yawning and eating stuff, and he's going nuts screaming to people that didn't even pay attention
to him. And you know who else didn't care? His teammates.
Right.
There's none of his teammates are around him.
This is why there are some semblance of Giant fans that say, trade him now while the value is high. There are a lot of fans out there that will say that. As good as he is and as a game-breaking player he is, I can tell you, I don't live with, but my brother and my dad, they're two right there.
I would just tell you, foolish. His actions and his comments are foolish, and there's no other way to look at it, and I would tell you that, yes, if Ben McAdoo is not going to hold of this, it's not going to go well for Ben McAdoo.
Here's Eli. He knows that 0-3 need to get a win.
That's the mindset. And, got to go on the road again next week into Tampa. And that's all we can worry about. Get that first win.
Now, we'll get to all the protest stuff in a little bit. Just doing the football first. Giants, and by the way, they also had the ball for 22 minutes to the Eagles, 38 yesterday, part of that running game. In terms of the Jets, surprise, surprise, they not only beat the Dolphins, they drilled them.
Play clock is down to one. McCown gets it off. He's throwing long on the near side for Anderson. He's got it!
Tom McCarthy on CBS.
Great throw.
Yeah,
great
made
throw
it 10-0.
Perfectly. And you see how Robbie Anderson has to extend to go get it. He does not stop it.
Never broke
or
stride.
Anything.
Yep.
Just an absolutely perfect throw and perfect execution by the New York Jets.
And here was Jamal Adams on SNY. Team was mentally prepared.
It's a mindset. We came out here with a mindset that, you know, we're going to come out here and do what we're supposed to do. We wanted to make a statement.
And how about the defense? 3 sacks, 9 tackles behind the line of scrimmage. They held Jay Ajayi to 16
awesome.
Yards.
It's an awesome
exactly.
performance.
Well, this
an
is
awesome
what we,
performance.
Right. This is what you were looking for. Here was Todd Bowles. Defense great.
Everybody was where they're supposed to be. We didn't leave no open gaps. We gang tackled instead of tackled with a single person. And You know, we got after it, and everybody communicated.
And they came one play short of a shutout as Miami scored in the final play of the game. Jets 1-2, home for the Jaguars next week. Some of the stuff around the league. I know you're huge on the Raiders.
Yes.
Last night, they got steamrolled by the Redskins.
From the 49, Cousins play action. Looks left, throws right, looking deep down the right sideline for Doxson. A jump ball. Doxson takes it away and walks in for the touchdown. One-on-one with David Amerson. Josh Doxson leaping up, pulling it in, and walking in for the touchdown.
Kevin Kugler, Westwood 1 on the Fan. Washington winning 27-10. And listen to these stats. You had Kirk Cousins throw for 365 and three touchdowns. Derek Carr was held to 118, picked off twice, sacked four times. Then you had the Packers beat the Bengals in overtime, 27-24. Mason Crosby, the game-winning field goal after the pass play, Aaron Rodgers to Geronimo Allison down the sideline. Falcons hold off the Lions. I need help with this one. 30-26 was the final. Now, it looks like Matthew Stafford hits Golden Tate for a touchdown. There's 8 seconds left. After a review, they decide knee is down. Why do you get a 10-second runoff with a review?
Because they don't have any timeouts left.
I understand.
And plus, the clock would be running. So the interesting thing is,
couldn't they theoretically get up there quickly and snap the ball?
No, not within
not
8 seconds.
Seconds?
But, you know, the interesting thing is, let's say they did not call that a touchdown.
Right.
All right, let's say they did not call
correct
a touchdown. They would have called for a review. Mm-hmm. That's how close it was. And the same thing would have happened. In other words, they would have found that it was not a touchdown, and they would have said 10-second runoff.
But don't you have
no timeouts and the clock was
okay
running.
Don't you have to give the team at least an opportunity to get up to the line of scrimmage?
It's unfair to the Falcons, though, at that
right
point.
Right, but
because you're giving them an extra play when the clock would have been running at that point.
No, you're missing my point. I'm saying if you rule it down, I see what you're saying. You got to just rule it down, and then you would have the review. Well, why would there be a review if it's not ruled a touchdown? It's technically not scoring play.
Because it's very close, and the booth could initiate a review under 2 minutes.
It's a flaw in the system, then.
It is kind of a flaw in the system, but everybody knows the rules.
To me, the bigger issue is, how do you overturn that? It was ruled a touchdown on the field. Was there definitive evidence to say that it wasn't? Because it looked like, to me, that Golden Tate was in the end zone.
That left knee touches. In real time, it does. But everybody knows the rule, and by the way, you want to talk about a classy coach? You want to talk about a coach who just got a contract extension? Jim Caldwell of the Detroit Lions basically said, that's the rule. They ruled it correctly. We lost the game. It was a great – and by the way, that was a great game. That was an absolutely great game. Just a terrific finish. Both quarterbacks with the – you know, Matt Ryan threw three interceptions, had one return for a touchdown. But again, Matthew Stafford gives his team a chance to win. This team gives up 30 points. He gives his team a chance to win.
And speaking of that, the Patriots are down a couple of points late. They get a stop on defense, and then they give Tom Brady the ball. They get a couple of big, long third and long conversions, and then finally they figure it out.
From the Texan 25, Tom off the snap. Drops back. He pumps. He throws it left. He's looking for Kutch in the end zone. It's caught!
Is he it?
It's a touchdown! Patriots!
Now, how come when he falls to the ground, the ball moves a little bit? Why is that not an incomplete pass?
That's right. And what happened with Sterling Shepard yesterday, the first one where he was kept out of the end zone, I get it. That was right.
The second one is
where the problem arises for fans, because it's clear that he has total possession of the ball in the end zone,
but has to go all the way through,
even all the way to the ground, and if the ball gets knocked out by the ground, it's going to be an incomplete pass. I hate that rule. It is a rule. It's a definitive rule. I hate it, because I believe that once you have possession of that football, both feet are in, as you're falling, you're still holding on to the ball. Whatever happens outside of the field of play should not matter.
And it's contradictory, too, because if you're a running back, all you have to do is get over the plane, boom, football, you could knock it out at that point. It doesn't matter. It's a touchdown.
Right. As soon as it breaks the plane, it's a touchdown.
But these guys have to go out of bounds, fall to the ground, and still have control of the football?
So, like, let's just say Sterling Shepard in some way is juggling the ball, and his feet now are up off the ground, and he's out of bounds, then I can understand no touchdown. But if he clearly has possession of the ball, this goes back to the Calvin Johnson rule about 6 years ago. We all know this, and I hate this rule. I'm an offensive player. I want touchdowns. I want to see players making plays. I saw Sterling Shepard the first time. He was kept out of the end zone. I get it. The ball never broke the plane of the goal line. The second one, that rule sucks.
And I agree.
In my eyes, that should be a touchdown. But the NFL – And the players and the coaches all know that that was ruled correctly. I just don't like the rule.
Well, the Patriot called Bob Soeki on Patriots Radio. Just quickly, too, the Bears did beat the Steelers in overtime 23-17. Jordan Howard, the game-winning 19-yard touchdown run there. And one other late game, Chiefs beat the Chargers 24-10. Kareem Hunt, buck 72 on the ground, and a 69-yard touchdown run. Oh, also, the Bills beat the Broncos. Von Miller takes a horrendous unsportsmanlike conduct
penalty. I don't like that
penalty.
I don't like that penalty. So he hits Tyrod Taylor.
Right.
He goes to lift, you know, give him the hand to give him up, and then as Tyrod goes to grab it, he pulls his hand
maybe
back.
Maybe not.
Joke. And they're both smiling.
And there was a third down play, too.
Yeah. I know, and they're both laughing at each other.
Yeah.
And the referee throws the flag, taunting on Von Miller. That third down play now gets put into a first down. The Bills keep the ball, and then they go on to kick a field goal. And essentially
game
extend
over.
Their lead, and the game is over.
I thought that everything was supposed to be loosened up this year at the NFL. Maybe not so much with the taunting penalties, but the celebrations, and then stuff like this is still being called. I mean, I did that.
Well, let me ask you a question. You're not going to throw the flag on Odell Beckham Jr. when he makes like a dog?
I mean, that's totally different, though, than the not taking your hand away and not pulling a guy up on the ground.
They're trying to take it out of the referee's decision-making process as to determine what is going on here. And that's one of the reasons why I believe they did loosen up the rules. But it's obvious that they are still paying very close attention to what is being said on the field, the actions of the players on the field. And if they feel like, you know, maybe this is the wrong call in this regard, but if they feel like there's a interaction between players that is inappropriate or unsportsmanlike, they're going to throw the flag.
All right, tonight we've got the Cardinals and Cowboys. Westwood One's coverage on the Fan at 8 p.m. Next hour, we'll do more of the protest sound. I'll get to some of it, actually. And I'll just quickly tell you that the Yankees did lose to the Blue Jays 9-5, but you did have Aaron Judge hitting two more home runs. He's got 48 now, so he is one behind Mark McGwire of that rookie record. Today, the Yankees play the Royals makeup game at the stadium. Coverage at 12:25. They start the week 5 behind Boston in the AL East. Red Sox, as we expected, just ran right through Cincinnati. They had a couple of come-from-behind wins, including yesterday, but they've won 6 straight and 14 of 17 as they've grabbed hold of the division. Red Sox wound up winning 5-4 yesterday. Nationals clipped the Mets 3-2. Nobody cares. Bulls and Dwayne Wade agree to a buyout. Wade to become a free agent. And Xander Schauffele wins the Tour Championship. But Justin Thomas actually won the FedEx Cup and the $10 million. There you go.
Right, okay, good for him. All right.
Listen to Boomer Esiason, mornings 6 to 10 on The Fan.
A lot on the protest so far, Boomer.
This is probably an off-color joke a little bit, but I always say that, you know, I probably do have CTE, but I didn't get it from playing football. I get it from covering football.
Yeah.
The fact that the heavy lifting, the societal issues that have reared their ugly head through the game of football, and then the agenda-driven people outside of the game and how they have attacked the game and have attached themselves and their opinions and their agendas to the game is what make the game more than just a game on Sunday now.
Yeah.
It's everybody that's got some sort of political agenda attaching themselves to whatever the issue of the day is and then attacking the NFL.
Yeah, I think that when – I'm not in everybody's home, so I don't know if people did turn off the game or not. Personally, for me, I know – that it's very, very difficult for me not to have football in my life. So if someone turned off the game just because of that and didn't watch Giants-Eagles or didn't watch Jets-Dolphins, maybe it would be easier for them to turn off the game if both of these teams end up, you know, 6-10, 5-11 at the end of the year. But for me, people listen to this radio station, love their teams. You see some kneeling during the national anthem, you're not going to watch football again? I just have a tough time believing that.
You know, the amazing thing is that Carmelo Anthony was finally traded to Oklahoma City when he opened up the opportunity for the Knicks to make a trade to a couple of other teams, Oklahoma City being one of them. You have the Yankees going into the playoffs. It looks like they're going to have the wild card at home. It looks like Severino will end up pitching against the Twins. There's basically 7 days left in the schedule, and they play all their games at home now. It goes all the way until Sunday. Interestingly enough, all the games in Major League Baseball next Sunday are all at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And everybody's playing at the same time, and it may not mean anything for anybody.
Yeah.
Because all the things might be set in stone, and we'll know who the Yankees are playing and all that other stuff. So that's a good story. Syndergaard gets on the mound, pitches 5 pitches, hits 96, 97 on the gun. Harvey goes back out there on the mound, and the reason the Mets are doing that is because exactly what they said. And what I've been saying here, that they want to get these guys on the mound. They want them to get the feel. They want them to go in the offseason. And they fully expect them all to be back next year, hopefully healthy and effective as pitchers. So this little, I guess, taste for Syndergaard and for Harvey is important for them, for them personally and for the Mets in the future. Hopefully they'll take something out of this and they'll apply it to next year.
Yeah, and it's important for the players. And if the players say that they need that, then we have to go with them.
Course. So I'm down with it. But my point being, there's a million other stories. Plus, the Jets win a game.
Right.
They look awesome on defense. Josh McCown, once again, a good, solid game. Throws the ball down to Robbie Anderson, a beautiful catch and run after the catch. And they're winning. But yet we're all focused in on the negative of what took place yesterday, because it is bigger than the game. And the game now is being used as the platform to get people's political opinions across the market. And there are people that are turned off by it. Let's go to Dougie in Northport, and I think he's going to be one of them. Dougie, what's happening?
Hey, Doug, good morning.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Good, right, good, Doug. Good.
I'm in one of those families that are diehard NFL fans that shut the games off yesterday, that did not watch them. The guys in London kneeling for the United States
on foreign soil. On foreign soil, yeah.
Yeah. Kneeling for our national anthem and then standing for theirs, it doesn't get more disrespectful than that. People are shocked. I don't understand when you guys are going to, or the other people are going to understand that we have, things are changing for us. Starbucks went out and went against the president. Their sales went down. It's going to happen. We're going to boycott the NFL. It's not that we don't want to watch it. We're not saying we're not going to watch it anymore. Stop the kneeling. We want to watch football. We want to watch sports. We want to watch hockey. They're going to do
it. Did they not play football, though, yesterday?
They did, but that's not the point. If you want to protest, protest on your own time. This is our time. We want to get away from this garbage.
Well, you can't tell people. I feel the same way prior to yesterday. What I felt about yesterday was a direct reaction to what happened on Friday and the intensity and the hatred that was shown towards the president from all athletes, from all sports. Well, with the exception of hockey. I don't think anybody got involved in hockey. I didn't see any of that. But you had your first Major League Baseball player ever taking a knee out in Oakland. You had LeBron James and the NBA just absolutely ripping into the White House and President Trump. And then, of course, you had the NFL players who, in large part, are very close to a lot of the NBA players because they probably feel like they have a lot of the same concerns that that Colin Kaepernick is protesting about. Fueling the fire. So yesterday was predictable.
Yeah.
100% predictable. Now, where we go from here, and we'll have to deal with it again tonight with the Dallas Cowboys and the Arizona Cardinals. And it'll be very interesting to see what the Dallas Cowboys do tonight, because their owner, Jerry Jones, has been steadfast in his support that everybody stand for the national anthem. And when you talk to guys like Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith, and I'm talking about the former African-American players that have played for Jerry Jones, they all love him. They all think that he walks on water, that he takes care of them, that he supports them, that he supports their off-the-field endeavors in their communities and everything else. And the last thing I think that they're going to want to do is embarrass their own owner on national television. But I could also see the owner standing on the sideline, locked arm in arm, standing for the national anthem. That I could see, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, things changed after Friday night a little bit. I mean,
I always feel like there's definitely an undercurrent of distrust and hate. And we all know this because all you have to do is pick up the newspapers, or if you read the daily news, it's just constant bashing. And all the liberal commentators and everything else are, you know, making their name now on Donald Trump, much like I think Fox News made their name on President
Obama.
It's
great to be in cable news.
It's great to be on the opposite side.
Right.
Because you're hammering and you're talking to the people that want to listen to what you have to say. So I get all that. I get all the politics of it all. The problem is that for me as an ex-football player, I can't believe that we are dealing with these politics on the field of play, especially after coming through a hurricane. Harvey and Irma,
yeah.
And seeing all the players and what they did for their local communities. And I think it's one of the reasons why Roger Goodell put out the statement that he put out, because it does talk about the players off the field and their community support and what they do. And for some reason, that is completely forgotten in all this.
Well, it's because everybody wants to take a guy kneeling during the national anthem and make assumptions about these players. And whether you agree with it or not, you have to at least understand that they're not doing it because they don't like the military. They're not doing it because they hate the country. I mean, it's to me, it's all about the direct response Friday night, and to make the leap that all these guys are bad guys that don't love the country or don't do good things or spitting in the face of the people who keep us safe, I think is a leap too far.
I would just say prior to yesterday, you know, I feel the same way. I feel like, you know, the reason you stand for the national anthem and the American flag is because of all those people that died protecting that flag.
Sure.
And in many ways, saving other people in other countries due to allied contracts that, you know, you're fighting somebody else's battles because you believe in what they believe in. And we're dealing with that today as well. I will always stand at attention, always have my hand over the heart, and always sing the national anthem out of respect for those people, for all those people that have gone before us, whether it be my dad, whether it be my uncle, whether it be the people that are serving today. And, you know, the interesting thing, you will hear people that are serving today saying that Colin Kaepernick has every right to do what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why they fight,
right?
Because people have the right to exercise their First Amendment rights, the freedom of speech and all that other stuff. I agree with that. Do that on your own time, though. Don't do that at work. Don't do that in uniform. Don't do that in the stadium. That's where I have a hard time really understanding this, because to me, that is about as offensive as it gets. Let's go to Mikey in Manalapan. Mikey, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, Giannotti?
Hey, what's up, Mike?
I have a couple points to make.
Yeah.
You know, first, the first point I want to make is, you know, I get it, the sign of unity and everything else. But here's my point is this, is the guys in London, you know, half of them kneeled. The other half stood for the national anthem. When they played the London national anthem, they all stood. They wanted to show unity. You should have dropped it through both of it. That's the first thing. The second thing, when Collinsworth goes on stage and says, you know, oh, they're all a bunch of smart NFL players and this and that. I don't think Beckham looked too smart last night urinating on a football. Did that look really smart on TV?
No, of course it didn't.
Of course.
And so anytime, you know, anytime we deal with the, what I say, the 1% of players that garner 99% of the headlines because one shoots himself or one beats his wife or one beats his kid, you know, that dominates the headlines. I'm telling you, Mike, I've been in these locker rooms. I was in a locker room for 14 years. Yeah, do we have our problems? Yes, just like every single...
Everybody else does.
That's everybody else does, but I'm telling you.
And the religion at home, and, you know, if you want to deal with it, that's great. That's fine. But you know what? I want to watch football. I don't want to hear about politics all day long.
I know. Neither, and I don't want to talk about politics all day long.
Right. And we may not, because...
But Greg, I'm just saying, 95% of the football players are great people.
Of course they are.
They're great people.
This is what drives me nuts, is because Beckham does that. Now every NFL player is dumb. And Chris Collinsworth is going to get criticized for saying that NFL players are smart. And this is the fan mentality that drives me crazy, is we just assume that because someone... I can't believe I'm defending players as much as I am here, but that just because that we're watching them and they play football and they're good at that, that they can't feel a certain way about something, they can't be smart, they can't stand up and express how they feel as an adult.
No,
because
they can catch a football. Hey, they can. Just don't do it in uniform on a football field.
But what I'm saying is,
that's
from that last caller.
That's what, like, people are saying.
Oh, I have to hear about how smart the football players are. Well, they are. A lot of them are.
Do you remember when there was LeBron James, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, and Carmelo Anthony at the ESPYs? What were they wearing?
They were all wearing black, and they stood there.
No, they were wearing tuxedos.
Well, they were black tuxedos.
They were not wearing their uniforms.
Right.
They weren't throwing it into your face while they were in their uniforms at their stadium, which is exactly what they should be doing. They should be using their platform that way.
And
which
a lot
is the
of them
appropriate
are.
Way.
In addition to,
which is the appropriate way.
Yeah, and in addition to the anthem protests, a lot of them are. Some aren't. Some are just doing it and they're totally disrespectful. Fine, but a lot of them are going out into the communities and also donating money. I mean, Kaepernick has donated a ton of money to help causes, and something that never gets talked about.
You may not like those causes. Let's go to Fat Man Scoop real quickly. Fat Man, what do you got, brother?
Hey, how you doing? I'm actually in England on tour right now. I know Kaepernick. I've sat with him on many occasions. This guy is probably one of the realest people that I've ever met when it comes to this. The thing, you know, because I listen to you talk when I'm in America and when I'm out of America, you have to understand that black people have a different relationship with police than white people do. For example, Boomer, what's your last encounter with the police been like?
When I got pulled over for speeding on the Hutchinson River Parkway, and the guy was not very happy with me, and he lectured me about, you know, not speeding and he gave me a ticket. So it was not he didn't put a gun in my face. I didn't put a gun in his face. I wasn't disrespectful of the uniform. As a matter of fact, I said, I know I did wrong. Give me the ticket and we'll move on here. That's basically what was the last time.
We don't get that, Boomer.
I don't know
when I get stopped. When I get stopped by the police, I turn all my lights on in my car, put my hands on the wheel, and my keys outside. I'm a 40 plus year old man, and I put all my windows down because I have to make sure that I do everything to not get myself killed tonight. Here's the thing: people look at this like this is an issue about the flag. It's not about the flag. It's about racial inequality. That's what it's about. Number two is I had a long talk with Colin Kaepernick, and I said to him, I said, yo, bro, why do you need to do this? You're a light-skinned brother, you look good, and you're a quarterback. I'm a man. I can tell you you're a handsome man. You don't need to do this. You're the last person that needs to do this. And he looked me in my face and he said, because it's not about me. It's about the kids. And I could not believe that. I happened to be at Hot 97 at the time because his girlfriend works for the station. I've never seen anyone, and I've talked to him on three or four occasions, that's more committed about this. And the thing is that he can't get a job because everybody's running from issues. But the thing is that if you don't support him and what he's doing, and you say, oh, the sponsors are not going to – we can't do this because the sponsors won't stand
for it. I got you. Fatman, I got you. I got you 100%. I gave you more than enough time to explain your side of it. And by the way, you know, I've worked with Shannon Sharp. I've worked with Bart Scott. I've worked with James Brown. I work with Nate Burleson now. And every single one of those guys will tell me that they have to have what they call the conversation with their kids. And yeah. I get what the conversation is, and I understand what Colin Kaepernick is trying to get across. I hate the fact that he's using the NFL field and the NFL uniform for his political agenda. I'm sorry. I wouldn't do that. And if somebody wore a Make America Great Again t-shirt on the sideline, you don't think that that would invoke an anger on the other side?
Oh, sure it would.
Of course it would.
Nobody's saying that it isn't.
So I understand we're caught in between people trying to understand each other. I'm just saying, as a former football player and somebody who covers the NFL on a daily basis, using the NFL football field for your political agenda, and I'm not talking about yesterday because I know exactly what yesterday was about. Yesterday was about unity between owners and players, white and black, standing up against the comments that were made by the President of the United States on Friday, and those comments were inflammatory. And I was cringing just listening to them. So I understand what yesterday was. But prior to that, I would just say that the political agendas of players should be off the field. And that's why I pointed to LeBron, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Paul and what they were saying when they were wearing their tuxedos at the ESPYs. They were given a platform. They use that platform, in my eyes, the appropriate way, and that's the way it should be done. That's how I feel.
Listen to Boomer Esiason, mornings 6 to 10 on The Fan.
It's an absolutely crushing defeat, and especially with the way that it happened on a 61-yard field goal. Jerry,
no doubt about it. I'll play you a couple of things here from the Eagle win. Here is Bob Papa being very real about what he saw yesterday in terms of the first couple of weeks. Now things changed a little bit on Sunday.
So twice the Giant offense has given the team the lead here in the fourth. Twice the defense has given points back.
And came up small and big spots. Special teams then failing them.
How would the discussion be this morning had the Giants won the game? Would people be discussing?
You would have discussed that the offense found something in the fourth quarter, found some fluidity in the defense.
Beckham's back.
Yeah, and
two touchdowns.
Sterling Shepard had 10 catches or whatever it was for 100 and something yards. And that the defense actually played well for a few quarters.
Save the season.
I know the Odell Beckham Jr. Initial celebration after his touchdown, making like a dog marking his spot, because he is a dog. I'm just saying that's his words, not mine, because he calls himself a dog. His comments after the game saying that he would do it again, and that if it costs 15 yards, it costs 15 yards. How does that make
you
feel?
It's funny. I've been looking for it. I can't find that. I have the audio that was on the air on the post-game show.
Right.
I do not have audio of that.
It was basically, to paraphrase, it's like, I'm going to do what I do when I get in the end zone. And then he also justified the fact that, hey, it didn't hurt us. It was 15 yards on a kickoff. just paraphrasing. So it didn't sound like he cared at all that he had hurt his team.
Well, they did lose, by the way. Jake Elliott kicks a game-tying field goal late and then the 61-yarder to win. Here was Beckham in terms of the celebration and not sure of the rule, and the official really didn't clarify it all that well.
I didn't know if the rule book said can't hike your leg. He said I p***ed on somebody, so I was trying to find the imaginary ghost that I p***ed on.
Yeah, I didn't see him. It's really funny. Yeah. It's really funny. You know, and some people, buy into that. But again, it just shows a lack of respect for the people that you're playing with and the coaches who are trying to coach you and the owners who are paying you. And you want to be the highest paid player in the league.
You're going to give that to him?
And to totally disregard the fact that you cost your team 15 yards and somehow try to justify it by the fact that it didn't hurt you and hurt your team. Is to me is ridiculous. I want to read something that, God, Jerry.
Well, I'll just play one thing because Buck and Aikman were very curious that it didn't look like McAdoo said anything to him. And then they finally found it when they came back from commercial. And it did look like McAdoo approached him and he wouldn't give us anything in terms of what he said.
Keep our personal conversations personal.
And that was it. He would not say
it. Think last week scared him off? But the reaction he got from the Eli stuff?
I thought last week was, I know me and Boomer completely disagree about it, but I thought last week was awful, and this to me is worse because of what he did last week.
Well, I think he's afraid to say anything. Right, exactly. I think that he heard the criticism of Eli, and he didn't want to get that again, and that's why he took the easy way out. Or either that, or he was just completely demoralized by they just lost a 61-yard field goal.
And how about two, and I was on him for the play calling last week. They ran it on back-to-back plays, whatever, and when they were down two touchdowns. How about yesterday when they need a yard and they're pitching the ball back 5 yards with a bad offensive line? How about when you've got the third and goal from the one, you do nothing, and then you run the ball from the shotgun? I don't understand. Quarterback sneaked the ball into the end zone.
Well, here's the thing. Beckham said absolutely understood McAdoo's position in regards to not wanting to kick the ball off from the 20, but he didn't promise not to do it again. But when I get in the end zone, I'm going to do what I do, he said. I'm going to try to spark this team, and the consequences are going to be what they are.
Imagine getting sparked by that.
Now he says, it's like life. You have to deal with the consequences, and that's something I can take. Our team, we were motivated from there. I don't think that set us back any. I just don't think we finished. So
I mean, you're a teammate going to get sparked by that?
Hey, look at Odell. Yeah, he's marking his spot in the end zone of the
let's get him, guys.
He's humping the pylon.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's totally ridiculous. And, he's like unhinged.
10 penalties for 137 yards in total.
I don't know if he's bipolar or what. It's like
overly emotional.
We have like 5 different people we're dealing with when we're dealing with him.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that. I think that he's just, his emotions run so hot when he's on the field that he cannot control himself.
Right.
And there's some people that are like that, and they really have problems understanding how to get under control.
One other penalty that Al and I covered in the award-winning warm-up before the show began was the John Jerry penalty.
That was great. That was amazing.
Grabbing the defensive player and holding him back, which nullified a first down.
Right.
Really just stupid.
Didn't need to do it, too, because no way he was getting off the field.
He wasn't. 0-3 next week. They're in Tampa. Here was Brandon Marshall in terms of the protests and his thoughts.
Getting to the point right now in America where, we can't ignore what's going on. This is real. We have to validate the other side. We have to understand what's going on the other side.
Now, some sound from the Jets in terms of this. They really played a great game, beat the Dolphins soundly 20-6. Game actually wasn't even that close. Here's Josh McCown. He says, we're in this as a group.
I think for me, there was just conversations that we talked about, not just last night, but weeks prior, and just guys, hearts move towards this or that. And my thing was, let's just do something together. Let's be together because that, to me, more than anything, is the best message we can send is unity.
And then there's Austin Seferian. Jenkins played a good game. He says we need to focus on issues and not words.
People should be focusing on issues, not about what someone says. There's bigger issues. There's issues. Like, I understand that he said something. I understand someone else said something. But there's actual issues that need to be addressed that affect people's lives, not just a tweet.
Here's the deal, Austin. Issues have been addressed, and they are continuing to be addressed. And again, I don't know why I have to keep reminding people, but just follow Commissioner O'Neill's Twitter feed for the NYPD, and you will see exactly what the NYPD is trying to do in regards to some of these issues that have been brought up. And if you follow it and you see what they're doing and how they are committed to doing what they're doing and to do it the right way, then you'll realize that people are reacting and are doing things. It's not like people are not doing anything. There are people in the NYPD that have gone to great lengths to make sure that mistakes don't happen. And do you think that we want our police going into these communities and doing something that is basically going to cost them their pension, their reputation, that they're not going to be engaged? Look, I always say 911, guess what? Somebody's coming. Somebody is always coming. Nobody is not answering that 911 call. And they're there for a reason. And they're there for the safety of the people who live in those communities. So just follow the Twitter feed. You'll see exactly what the NYPD is trying to get done. And in a city of 8 million people, it's almost impossible not to have something go wrong somewhere along the line.
You ever hear Josh McCown talk about his porn addiction?
No.
Oh, it's hilarious. Eddie, we got to find that audio.
That's just great.
I'm telling you, at some point today, I don't know. I'm like bummed out now, man.
Yeah, I know. It just takes a sucks the life
out
of you.
I'm bummed out.
Sucks the life out of you.
I'm trying to find a way out. Too bad I need a way out.
Are you? You're not a Jet. That's right. You're a Minnesota Viking fan.
Well, yeah. I don't really care as much as I used to.
All right.
But
well, they looked good yesterday with their backup quarterback.
I know.
369, three scores. Case Keenum.
It done.
How about that? They beat the Bucks 34-17. Redskins easy over the Raiders 27-10 last night.
Is somebody going to pay? I know they're paying him a lot of money. But don't you think it's time that the Redskins make a commitment to Kirk Cousins?
Well, they can't now. I mean, with the leverage situation, there's just no way because he probably doesn't want to be there. He's probably going to end up in San Francisco next year.
Why would
he
not want to be there?
Well, because he wants to play, I think.
Seems like his head coach knows him pretty well, and he's got the best out of his quarterback. I don't necessarily know that I'd want to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I bet you he's going to end up in San Francisco.
Did you see Chris Thompson coming out of that backfield last night? How about Vernon Davis looks like a new player? Vernon Davis, the tight end that was in San Francisco, that you remember Mike Singletary was his head coach and sent him to the locker room.
That's right, yeah.
In the middle of the game,
and he pulled his pants down.
The University of Maryland Terrapin, and said yesterday that look, I'd go to the White House, I'd go and sit down with Donald Trump, and I'd go talk to him, and he'd probably find out what I have to say to be somewhat interesting. I give him credit for saying what he said.
Yeah.
Couple of other notable scores. Packers beat the Bengals in overtime 27-24. Cincinnati got out to a great start, and then, well, they couldn't finish. Falcons beat the Lions 30-26. That wild finish, the 10-second runoff at the end. And the Patriots beat the Texans 36-33. Tom Brady,
wow.
All of 40 years old, 5 touchdowns on the
Jesus.
Day. By the way, they also get the damn 2-point conversion to take all the intrigue out.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
They score the touchdown, they go up one. All right, let's get two. No problem. They do that
as
well.
They are an amazing, amazing offense.
Let me ask you this.
It's an amazing offense.
I didn't see this anywhere, and I didn't look. I should have. When was the last time they lost two in a row at Gillette, and have they ever lost two in a row at Gillette?
Oh, you mean under Belichick? Well, that's right. Belichick and Brady have been at Gillette since it's opened. So
right.
That's
probably not.
I don't think they have.
Pretty wild. So they win. And the Chiefs looked great again yesterday. They won. They beat the Chargers 24-10. Cardinals, Cowboys tonight. Westwood One's coverage on the Fan at 8 p.m.
What do you think about your Cowboys tonight?
I think they win tonight. I think they play well. I think we're going to get a high-scoring game tonight. We better, because I have Dak Prescott. My fantasy team need some points tonight. And I think we'll be good to go. I think Ezekiel Elliott will run with a purpose. And, they'll win a game, 41-34. Right. How about
I really
that?
Think that right. The Cardinals offense can do that, though?
I don't think so.
Have you seen the Cowboys defense?
I understand. I saw them 1 week.
Hey,
they were good. 1 week,
they were
terrible.
What are all those great Cowboys who have been suspended coming back? When's that happen? You got like a whole team coming back, don't you?
Week 8.
They're a long way to go. 17 guys being suspended down there or something like that?
I figure they'll come back, and then Ezekiel will go out.
Right.
That's
okay.
The way that will go. And I'll play just one clip from the Yankees, who did lose to the Blue Jays, but this Aaron Judge continues.
Now the right-hander deals. Swung on, and there is a long fly to left. That ball is high. It is far. There it is, gone. Judge hits one again. Two homers in the game. A Judgian blast to left center. All rise. Here comes the Judge.
Do you see how many people were at that game last night?
Yeah,
yesterday.
It was Bautista's final game with Toronto. They love their baseball. All good.
Is that what it was for? Is that why they
went
there?
Yeah, that's what it was. The Yankees had no shot in that game. But the celebration the night before, the fact that they were sending Bautista off, they had no shot. And I don't know if you guys watched the celebration on Saturday.
I did not.
Tanaka was hilarious. Every single interview, he came up behind the person stone-faced and poured an entire beer over their head and then just walked away. I mean, that guy, he was terrible on Friday night.
He was awful Friday
night. He was
so
bad, but he was having himself a blast in that celebration.
It seems like, even though he doesn't speak English to the press and all that stuff, probably gets away with whatever he's doing within the locker room, but it seems like he's a pretty popular teammate.
He is. He has to be able to do that. People were having a blast. And there's,
right.
I mean, when you're interviewing Tanaka in that post game and you got the interpreter, like two-question minimum. Please on that.
I agree.
I mean, there was like five or six
questions. Every question's a question and answer, question and answer.
Yeah. Well, he's got to figure it out, though, as much fun as he
has. By the way, it's funny because we discussed that last week, and I said Tanaka's your two. Well, I tell you, after Friday night,
Sonny Gray's got to be. So,
yeah, but Tanaka was tremendous.
All right,
so it's the All-Star
break. It's going to be really interesting, again, some of the decisions that Joe Girardi will make. And then once they figure out who they're playing in the wild card game, most likely Minnesota.
Yep.
But if they're not, and it's somebody else, I think what he'll do – knowing Joe Girardi, I think the way the Yankee fans know him, he will set it up, assuming they win that wild card game with Severino pitching. He'll start the next series via the matchup deal. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, CeCe's great against these guys, or Sonny Gray has had good luck against these guys, or Tanaka's really – I don't think it has anything to do with salaries. I don't think it has anything to do with any of that. I think it's going to have to do with matchups, and Joe Girardi will decide that. And that will be the interesting – aspect, assuming the Yankees can win that wild card game.
How about the Severino scare in batting practice, too? Guy gets hit with a line drive in his back, has to go off, talk to the trainer on Saturday, and then, of course, I mean, that's the difference between the Yankees and the Mets. That's the Mets going into the postseason. That's Syndergaard. The ball goes square through his body, and then he'll be out for a year and a half.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but Severino's fine, of course.
Right. I mean, Mariano Rivera did shag flies and tear his, ACL or something one day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it does happen. But
they had won a lot by then.
That's true. Red Sox did beat the Reds 5-4. Boston's won 14 of 17. They have a 5-game lead into the final week of the regular season. Nationals beat the Mets 3-2. Mets have a doubleheader today. Whoa.
Think about this playoff series. Think about, Boston, Houston, or Boston, Cleveland, New York, Houston, New York, Cleveland. Think about that for the American League.
It's great.
Those four teams.
Oh, by the way, the National League's good too, though.
For us, the National League doesn't mean anything here in this city.
Right.
But
all true.
But I would just say the American League, man, those four teams in the playoff, that's pretty special.
Diamondbacks did beat the Marlins 3-2. J.D. Martinez, who has been spectacular since going to Arizona, the game-winning RBI single. Arizona clinches the top wild card spot. Clayton Kershaw won his 18th Dodgers over the Giants. The Bulls and Dwayne Wade agree to a buyout. And golf season.
So where does Dwayne Wade end up, you think?
Cleveland?
Yeah, it's got to be.
He goes to Cleveland, I guess today will be the official announcement of the Carmelo trade.
Did you see the crowd that was waiting for Carmelo at the end?
Well, good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. His thing was fantastic for him. If
you are a Carmelo fan, then you got to root for him going to OKC and possibly – I don't think they're any better, They're not knocking off the Warriors.
The Knicks did good, though, in this.
I think the Knicks did great
for two reasons. Because he finally relented and said, all right, it's not Houston or bust.
Right.
They did well.
The Knicks did what they thought was in their best interest while trying to help Carmelo. Now he's with Paul George and Russell Westbrook. The thing for the Knicks is now they can start the rebuild.
Yes.
And I saw where Porzingis was saying, well, I'm ready for this. But you better grow some stones, son.
Yeah.
Because, this crap that went on here last year and your insubordination leaving without going through your end of your exit interview and everything shows a lack of maturity in my eyes. And now it's on you.
Yeah,
I hope Hornacek is tough on him. I hope he's tough on him. I hope he grinds him to the point where, this kid's got to play both ends of the floor. He's got to get rebounds. He can't just sit out there 25 feet and take
I think he will. I mean, if you see him working out this offseason, I mean, he was ticked off. I think he comes back as a great year.
Yeah, we'll see.
This is the first time, too, that the Knicks you feel like really
We're turning the corner. I like the fact that they got rid of the $58 million in Carmelo's salary.
Yeah.
They got younger players. Cantor, everybody seems to like him, but he may be a trade chip.
Maybe.
He may be a trade trip at the because they're not a playoff team.
No.
Let's face it. There are all these acquisitions that they have now that could be quality trade chips when that time comes. And then they can continue to rebuild with younger, faster, and more athletic players, hopefully.
And Enes Kanter, even if he plays a lot, doesn't play, it doesn't really matter. He's got to opt in next year, too. So he's here for this year, then the next year. It's only going to be 2 years at the very most. McDermott only 1 year.
Okay.
Listen to Boomer Esiason, mornings 6 to 10 on The Fan.
Here he is. Other issues other than just how well coiffed he is, I can tell you that right now.
Big freaking guy, huh?
He is a freaking guy, and he is Justin Pugh, and he is the offensive guard for the the New York Giants, who unfortunately now are 0-3. And all I can say to Justin is that I've walked a mile in this man's shoes, because I used to have a radio show here, Justin, back in the day. Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. I used to have a radio show back here in the day with Mike and the Mad Dog from 93, 4, and 5. And progressively, we got worse each and every year. And progressively, those radio shows got more antagonistic each and every year. But I showed up. And that's probably one of the reasons why I'm on the air today, because you honor your commitments.
You got to. And like I said to you earlier off air, this is a chance for me to kind of, you know, impart what I see from my side of it and get a different perspective on things. So I'm going to come out here. I'm going to battle for my guys and, you know, things will start turning around the football field, and things will work out.
Well, I hope so. I know you're here for Con Air, but before we get to that, all right, let's talk about, you know, exactly what went on in the NFL and maybe some of the discussions that you as Giant players had prior to stepping on the field yesterday and the national anthem. Give me your take on where you think the NFL players are, how they reacted yesterday, and how your own team reacted.
Yeah, so obviously everyone has known about the protests for the past few, you know, two seasons now. And once the president came out and said what he said, the NFL felt a need to have unity, and I think that's a great thing. I've never walked a mile in another man's shoes, and playing football, I've seen guys come from all walks of life, all different backgrounds. So to be able to go out there and be one and be united, I think that was something the Giants wanted to do, and as a team we wanted to do. So I'm here to support my teammates, support guys in the league, and I think we did a good job of that yesterday.
Was yesterday the closest that the team has been throughout all of the protests because of what the president had said on Friday night? Did you guys feel closer because of it, or
divided? I think so. I think closer, because you want to be there to support each other and have each other's back. And what makes this country so great is we have the ability to have your own opinion and have that freedom of speech. So I think guys can go out there and have that. And I think across the NFL, you saw how everyone felt about it.
How much do you guys talk about this when you're not doing interviews, like amongst yourselves? I know every reporter's going up to you in the locker room, but is this a discussion that you guys are having in the locker room when reporters aren't around, teammate to teammate?
Yeah, I think so. I think, guys, it's become more and more of a topic of discussion since, obviously, the election and everyone talking about, you know, going through that and things that have been said since then. So I just try to go out there and try to – I don't think last year I did a good enough job of kind of seeing what was going on with Colin Kaepernick. I didn't really realize what was – happening while it was going on, and now being able to look back and sit back and be there to support guys, I think that's the main goal.
Talking to Justin Pugh, offensive guard with the New York Giants, one of the questions in regards to this, you know, yesterday up in New England, the fans were booing the players during the national anthem. I mean, it was palatable. You could hear it. It was loud. What was the reaction in Philadelphia for you guys during the national anthem?
Well, I wasn't aware of what other teams were doing. I actually thought it was just us that was going to be locking the arms and doing that. And then obviously I saw, you know, three teams didn't come out. Some other teams knelt the whole time. And we felt it was the best way to show all of us together as one, interlocking the arms and doing that. Fans also have their right to say what they want to say. Mm-hmm. The NFL players, you don't realize how much of an influence you have or being a catalyst for change that you can be until you're in that stage. And even now, being a part of it, you don't realize it how big of a deal it is. I just think I'm going out there playing a football game. And then obviously I wake up this morning and see it was way, way more than that. I think a lot of times athletes, you kind of get blinded by it because you have your blinders on getting ready for a game, and it hits you and you realize you can be a part to make change and kind of have a voice.
Right, and you know, yesterday's it's a tough way to lose a football game, man. And I know you guys got behind 14-0, so there goes the running game, and everybody wants to look at the running game. But kind of explain to Giant fans why, you know, you would abandon the running game and what happened to your offense yesterday going into the no huddle, the hurry up situation, and what that does to you guys as offensive linemen and the mindset of the team.
Well, you know, going into that game, obviously we knew it was going to be a hot day, 90 degrees. We thought getting into the no huddle, going against Philly, who has a great front, you know, great front seven, great defensive line. They kind of do those hockey shifts where four guys come on, four guys go off. So we thought it kind of would be to our advantage to do that. And obviously getting down 14-0 early, it wasn't really early. It was in the first half. We went back and forth. Obviously, I wish we were able to put some points on the board early. But things were working for us. We were able to throw the ball effectively, and I think that's kind of what we started working with. And if we would have been up, you would have saw us getting over 100 yards rushing, because we would have been in four-minute offense kind of at the end of the game, fourth quarter, running the ball. So it really is kind of how it turned out. I'll take being able to put up, you know, 24 points. better than where we've been.
Thinking you may actually improve. What happens on fourth and one with Orleans Darkwa? You're down there. You know, you think you got a touchdown with Sterling Shepard twice, and twice, unfortunately, overturned, and those were not touchdowns. Then it's fourth and one. It's Orleans Darkwa, and it's right up the middle, and he gets stuffed.
Yeah, obviously, as an offensive lineman, that's one of those plays you wish you can get back, get more of a push. It's a tough situation. It's one of those things we're trying to get the momentum in our favor. Philly has not been a place that we have played well at in the past. We've been down there and gotten our butts beat on.
Hey, were they in goal line defense?
They were like in a 6-2 gap defense.
And you guys were – I thought you were in your regular offense. Were you in your regular offensive personnel?
Yeah, we were in like three receivers, a tight end, a running back. It was one of those situations where I'm sure we wish we could – I don't know. I really had to get in there and look at the film to be able to break it down. But we want to be able to get seven there. Seven there would have been a completely different game. It's 7-7 coming back into the second half. It would have been a completely different dynamic of ball game.
How about the mindset of the team after the game, Justin? You know, I know that there's a lot of people that were upset with the way that Odell Beckham Jr. celebrated, and then after the fact he said, look, if I have to do it again, I'll continue to do it, even if it does cost us 15 yards. You're a teammate of his. I'm sure you stand behind him and what he brings to your football team. But when you hear him say something like that, how does that make you feel that he's willing to give up 15 yards and a kickoff to do it again?
I don't think he'll do it again. I think it's one of those things where you learn from it. Obviously, there's been boundaries set. There's been more leniency towards being able to celebrate. Obviously, there's a fine line that we haven't found yet because week two we got one. We got a personal foul.
Well, Evan Ingram's a rookie, and he grabbed his crotch. And basically, we saw the effect that that had on that game against the Detroit Lions. And, you know, I did that game for Westwood One, and I basically kind of really scolded Evan because he's got to realize what's going on here. And I know he hasn't scored a touchdown ever before, and this is his first regular season touchdown. So sometimes the emotion of the moment takes over for you. But for Odell Beckham Jr. to see what happened that night and then to do what he did yesterday compounds the problem. And then after the game, basically say, if I have to do it again, I'll do it again.
I think, though, they'll talk to him because we can't be doing that. We can't have 15 yards hurting our team. But obviously the emotion that he plays with and the intensity he plays with, if you look at anything I've said about Odell in the past, I support him 100%. He's a great teammate. There's obviously a fine line where you don't want to hurt the team and put us in a bad spot. So I think in the heat of the moment after the game, when you lose on a 61-yard field goal, there was a lot of emotions. Luckily, they didn't interview me because I might have said some things that I didn't want to say either, because that's a tough way to go out, especially when you kind of – explode for 24 points. We didn't kind of. We did explode for 24 points, and to lose a game like that was definitely tough.
Do you feel like finally now the monkey's off your back, that you've got things going and you're going in the right way, in the right direction?
I think so. I think we found some things that are working for us, and last year we ran that offense and we went to the playoffs. This year we were trying to be more multiple, and obviously we still have to be able to do that, but we have to be able to win games, and that's the bottom line. So I guess what was it? Don LaGreca was really bashing the offensive line and everything. I saw some clip of him.
Well,
this
he doesn't
week,
work
so.
Here, so don't worry about that. If you want to see him, I could set up a meeting with him if you'd like to talk to him in person.
No, I saw that clip last week, and I was like, someone sent it to me today, and they were like, he's going to try to bash you guys again.
Well, you know, the bottom line, he's got a family to feed.
Yeah, of course. Right? I'm talking to Giants guard Justin Pugh on The Fan. All that criticism that you guys have heard, and Eric Flowers gets singled out. You don't hear so much Justin Pugh stinks. You hear a lot of Eric Flowers stinks. Do you go to his defense? How is he dealing with that? As you being a line mate of his, how do you handle all that criticism when you hear it from the outside?
Offensive line plays a unique position. There's five guys. As a quarterback, you're taking the heat. If you lose, if you win, you know you'll get the credit.
Right.
But there's no one really to blame but the one guy. As an offensive line, it's five working together, and the whole mantra we're starting to take on is five as one. So if you come at one guy, come at all of us. Left tackle is the hardest position, I think, besides quarterback, to play in the NFL. That and defensive back when you're left on an island. You're going against the best pass rusher. He's going backwards, or you're going backwards. That rusher's coming forward. It's a tough spot to be in. I've played that position. I play tackle. It is a tough position to play. So I think he's – it's not lack of trying. It's not like he wants to go out there and play bad. You won't have a job. None of us will have a job if we don't succeed at what we do. But he's putting all the work. He was here during the offseason. I think he played better yesterday. Obviously, haven't watched the film yet, but he's going to continue to get better with our support. Getting beaten down by social media, getting beaten down by the guy that's just watching it, sitting there on his couch drinking a beer, is a tougher way to do it. Everyone in our room knows what we have in him, and we're going to keep supporting him and keep being behind him.
Very well said. Very professional. That's Justin Pugh. Remember this. We work the hardest. We're known the least, but who cares? ask for We Are the Reason. That's the offensive lineman's prayer, and remember that, all right?
Got it.
Guard Justin Prieur is here. He's partnered with Conair Men. As you can see, he's very well coiffed. So much more I put together than you are, Greg, this morning. He's here to spread the word of Conair Men's mantra, if you want. That's respect the ritual. So what is respect the ritual?
Respecting the ritual. I think everyone has their routine, their ritual. Mine personally is every Friday before the game, I get a haircut, get the beard looking good. It's obviously, there's that old saying too, look good, play good. And I definitely take that into account. Offensive linemen aren't normally known for having themselves put together a little bit. So obviously trying to change that a little bit. So the Conair man, eye stubble, you know, flex head trimmer has been unbelievable. I've been working with Conair for a few years. I've actually been on the show before.
Yeah, you have, yes.
Working with Conair, and they do an unbelievable job. They're taking the advice from the men, and they're really turning it and putting it into the product. There's 48 different settings. You can have beards for anybody. Had that professional look, and I think that's something.
Is there batteries in that thing?
I'm actually proud of you.
You charge it.
Is it charged?
Yes.
You want to shave me?
You're a little mess over.
Come on. What do you do? What's your routine looking like?
Hey, come on. You go ahead and shave me while I'm here. If I'm looking so bad, Boomer, then let's see how this thing works. Go ahead. And while I'm getting shaved, I'll ask you about your coach, right? So just try not to look at the Conair as good of a job as it's doing. Thanks, Boom. So, oh, wow, this really is that flex head. You weren't lying about that.
It gets all the angles, the rough around here. You just spin it down. You can make it
here we go now.
Flex head. I haven't been clean shaven since like April of 2006, so this is going to be something else.
You're going to have the baby face.
Yeah. So your coach calls out Eli Manning, right, after the whole game before, but then Odell Beckham Jr. acts like a dog and he's doing his thing. Doesn't call him out in the post game. Is that something that registers with you guys in the locker room? What do you think about that?
I think the Eli play was just—it was one play that he was referring to. Yeah. Everyone wants to kind of blow it up and make it into. Uh-huh. He's talking about sloppy quarterback play overall. It was the one delay a game, and obviously we're going to stick with him. You guys are making it. You guys are making it tough, but you know you're looking good over there. You're looking clean. You're looking cut. You're a Conair man now. You're gonna have to come to the
only
event
shaving
tomorrow.
Shaving half of my face.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
It's the rookie cut.
There you go.
So, all right, so everybody blew out the Eli Manning out of proportion is what you're trying to tell me, right? Watch out, man. Where are you going with that thing?
What do you mean?
All right, so you don't – that everybody – see, the sports talk radio, you know, if you're paying attention to the criticisms, people are saying that a head coach cannot call out his quarterback. He can't call out his quarterback in that situation because it sends a bad message to the locker room and the team. You're saying that is not true.
We know who Eli Manning is. He's been here for 14 years. He's dealt with all the criticism from every corner of the country. He can handle that. If I got a penalty or a holding call, a little bit of a sack, they're going to criticize me. That comes with part of the business.
Sure, he handles. He's a pro.
Did you hear Eli's response?
Of course,
I did. I can handle it. I can handle it.
The guy could do whatever. The guy could do no wrong, really, in a lot of Giant fans' eyes. Because I always think he's never going to embarrass the organization. He's always going to be the same way. He never seems to change on the field either. Does he ever yell at you guys?
Never. I mean, he's first one in, last one out. He's leading by example. He's not a rah-rah, screaming and yelling type of guy at all.
Right.
You've met Eli. You know he's not like that. But he's going to go out there, and he's going to lead by example. And he's like, all right, let's go do this.
You know, the amazing thing is I had an offensive lineman. His name was Max Montoya, one of the great guys ever to play the game. You probably don't even remember who he was, but he was my left guard. And he was always the closest guy to me in the huddle. He was always the guy that was, you know, kind of getting under my skin a little bit and yelling at me during the game. I'll never forget, we're playing a game and I'm holding the ball and I get sacked. And he's on the ground and I'm on the ground and he's looking at me and I'm looking at him and he's yelling at me like, you can't believe. Throw the effing ball already. Stop holding on to the ball. What is you going to get us all killed? And he's screaming at me. Now he was about 4 or 5 years older than me, but I will never forget that one moment when he told me that I got to get rid of the freaking ball. Have you ever yelled at Eli about, come on, man, you got to get rid of the ball. You can't hold on to it.
I've never yelled at Eli. He's got the seniority by me, you know, almost by a decade. I'm sure some of those David Deals, Chris Knees, they might have yelled at him. No, he does a good job of getting us into the right play at the right time. So I can never get on for that.
Well, I wish you luck. You got a big game next week against Tampa. Hopefully you'll get this thing right. And I know you got to deal with McCoy next week. And it just never gets easier in the NFL because every team has got somebody that you got to deal with, especially on the defensive line. No, we don't want to. He's not going to feel your face.
Why not?
By the way, visit conair.com for all of Justin's tips over there. And Justin, it's great to see you. Thanks for holding up your end of the bargain and coming in today after a tough loss yesterday.
Of course. Appreciate you guys having me on.
You got it, man. All right.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.